far been an interesting discussion. And when asked, you know, would you do that? My answer is yes. I'll do it. I mean, I'll sing the Whiff and Poof song in my underwear to be on with this group. It's an extraordinary opportunity. And so, yes, I will do it. But the trade-off is I am going to be brief, and I promise. Every time someone says they're going to be brief, I check for my wallet, because that means 45 minutes later you're still there. But trust me, I'll be quick. I think with the exception of Linda, everyone on this panel is a lawyer. And lawyers typically like to think about judicial independence with reference to the law and constitutional structure. So typically, the first place lawyers look when they think about constitutional structure and the law is to look at, in the federal system, you look at Article 3 and you look at life tenure and you look at the salary that can't be diminished. And at the state level, you look at separation of powers. And the thing that's very frustrating to lawyers is that the conversation begins there but doesn't end there. And I think that's what Justice O'Connor was alluding to in saying it's rather like pornography. I know it when I see it, because the Constitution isn't precise on this point. That as a practical matter, our understanding of judicial independence derives less from constitutional law and structure than from really something else. If you think about it for a moment, and think about, you know, the ways in which Congress, for example, could drive the judiciary to its knees if it so chose, there are a variety of ways. Tomorrow, it could start impeaching judges willy-nilly because it didn't like their decisions. It could strip them of jurisdiction. It could cut their budgets. It could disestablish their courts. It could do all kinds of things that would make the judiciary's independence largely meaningless and still preserve life tenure or tenure during good behavior, defined however Congress chooses to define it, and a salary that can't be cut. And so I think for that reason, we need to look beyond the Constitution and structure and understand that really, when we say these things that I've just listed are threats to independence, it's because they're threats to our collective understanding of what the role of the judiciary ought to be in American government. A collective understanding that really derives from norms that have been two centuries in the making. And if you look to the founding generation, they really did believe in these norms. And Justice O'Connor quoted from James Madison, who spoke in terms of judicial independence and its cardinal importance. And if you look at the notes that James Madison wrote, over and again you see delegates to the Constitutional Convention saying, we are all about preserving the independence of the judiciary against threats and intimidation. Trouble was they did an incomplete job for reasons that in retrospect are perfectly understandable. I think the fact of the matter is they had 3 months in February, in 3 months in the summer in Philadelphia without air conditioning to get the job done. They were far more concerned about the first two branches of government than they were the judiciary. That was where the action was. And when it came to judges, they were aware of a couple of problems that had recently occurred, one affecting tenure, judges being thrown out of office for making decisions that legislators didn't like, and the other affecting salaries. So as to those couple of problems, they fixed them. But as to this other stuff, stripping jurisdiction, cutting budgets, impeachment abuses, and so forth, not much experience with that. There's nothing in the Constitution about it. So that although there were norms against this kind of behavior, it wasn't something that really occurred to anybody. But for every generation since the founding, we have had cycles of anti-court sentiment in which these various mechanisms are trotted out routinely in what almost strikes me as a dance step. The first step in the dance is we have a period of political realignment, a major shift in power. In come the Jeffersonians. In come the Jacksonian populists. In come the radical Republicans in the Civil War. In come the progressives, right? With each new, you know, political shift, we see the judges kind of lagging behind because the judges were selected by the outgoing regime. And when they make a decision that the new regime doesn't like, in come the threats. Let's impeach them. Let's take away their jurisdiction. Let's cut their budgets. Let's do these things. The folks who support judicial independence then rise up and say, hold on, this is inconsistent with the norms that have been in place forever. Don't do it. Meanwhile, the new regime starts appointing or selecting new judges that think a little bit more the way the new regime does. And so the pressing need to do something about judges is a little less. Meanwhile, those who are defending the courts gain traction. Gradually, equilibrium is restored, and the norms, likewise, are preserved. And so this goes on cycle after cycle. Now, you could say that if what we're experiencing now and what the other panelists are simply saying is just another cycle, we could take an almost Alfred Newman, what me worry, approach to all of this. This too shall pass. Who cares, right? The reason we need to care is because I think there may be something more enduring going on here that really does animate the concerns of the other members of the panel. That increasingly, And really, I think we live in an age of legal realism, and increasingly the perception is that judges aren't impartial arbiters of the law, that they are just like other politicians who have agendas, who have constituencies, who don't follow the law but follow their own political predilections. And what if that view, you know, wins the day, of course, it really does spell the doom for judicial independence. Because why do we need independent judges if they're just rogue legislators who aren't following the law, who are simply doing what they want to do? We ought to be controlling them. And we see the sentiments, you know, sort of working their way into public consciousness in a variety of ways, right? We see it in polling data. For 56% of the public are saying, although judges say they follow the law, more often than not, they follow their feelings. We see it in judicial elections, where millions of dollars are being pumped into judicial elections. Do you really think that people are throwing millions of dollars at judges because they want impartial ones? Maybe, but the perception is otherwise. And we see it again in the judicial appointments process, where oftentimes we're less concerned about whether they're capable, qualified, and impartial than about whether they're going to do what you want them to do. And in that environment, I think it's understandable that the threat to independence seems to be somewhat more enduring. And so for those of us, you know, for the challenge, for those of us who seek to preserve independence norms, right, that have been in place for centuries, has been to demonstrate that good judges do indeed seek to preserve the rule of law, and that these norms are worth preserving. It really requires, in other words, that we have a longer conversation than we have about the role that law plays in judicial decision making. And I think it does require, by the way, that judges be a little bit more forthcoming about, you know, their thought process, just as a general matter, not in specific cases. Because the problem is that when a newspaper reports a judicial decision of the Supreme Court, the first thing that the newspaper reports is the five conservatives said X and the four liberals said Y. That is why the decision happened the way the decision happened. And with that, it's rather hard for the judge to stand up and say this is all about the law. It's not about political predilections. That in point of fact, something more complicated is going on there. That there are, you know, 100 million case filings every year. The vast majority of them are right by the book. And in some cases, you do have close cases in which judges have to make some kind of policy decision, and their interpretations of the law may well be affected by their perception of, you know, by their backgrounds, by their educations, and in some cases, by their philosophy. That doesn't mean that the law is irrelevant, but it does mean, I think, that we need to explain this a little bit better to the public, that simply being told by the judges, all we do is follow the law, and they're being told in the news media that all they're doing is counting the liberal versus conservative votes. And I think that down the road, we need, if we can have that conversation, we can, I think, restore the kind of respect for the law that will enable this cycle to wind down and to proceed apace as we've seen in the past. Thank you.